So my big impossible right now.
So my impossible is...
My impossible.
The impossible.
I think the impossible...
An impossible dream that I think we could pull off one day would be...
I am Tansley Stearns, and this is Despite Impossible. I am a longtime credit union executive leading Community Financial as president and CEO. I have always admired and been inspired by people whose passion is boundless and who don't comprehend the word impossible. This show focuses on their stories. Today's guest is Randy Herrington, a musician, a strategist, a dear friend, a chef, and professional executive coach. He is also the founding partner of Strategic Arts and Sciences, where he invests time as a seasoned strategic planning facilitator and executive communications consultant. This is Randy's story. People who know you best will describe you as...
crazy. and hopefully in a good way. I think that sums it up. Surprising. I tend to look at the world in interesting and different ways, and at least to me. And it often shocks other people that I'm and family members and I think curious would be another word that I would use. That's I'm very interested in some pretty extreme things. Everything from quantum mechanics all the way through to we were having conversations about sitar music yesterday. And so it's just whatever is out there in the world that is fascinating, I find interesting, and other people see it occasionally as being borderline wackadoodle. So
what about today's version of yourself would impress your 10 years younger self?
Holy cow. That I am doing a lot of yoga. So 10 years ago, I was doing a lot of bourbon, and I love the bourbon. I still do, but I'm drinking a lot less bourbon, and I'm doing a lot more yoga. And if I had told that to myself 10 years ago, I would have been, what, are you kidding me? Because I ran a lot for a while, and so I'm one of those people who's always had a very tight hip. Everything's always been tight. It's always been tight. And so I'm finally in my life trying to not be so tight. And that would be very surprising to my 10-year-ago person.
What's your most unpopular music opinion?
Oh, my. I like jam bands. You know, I was a Deadhead and all of that kind of business. And I still like Fish. And right now my favorite band is Goose. And there are so many other people that are in my cohort that are like, these songs never end. They start and they go on for 22 minutes. That's not a song. It's just people wandering around musically. And so I kind of like that. And I get a little bit of abuse. I'm also, I don't really say disparaging things about pop music, but I don't know. I find that I really can't listen to it. I find it cloying, and I find it irritating. I have to really go into some kind of a meditative state if I'm like on airplanes or other place where there's Muzak.
Yes.
Playing. Mm-hmm. And I know other professional musicians who, have said they cannot listen to music in restaurants or even at home because that's all they'll think about. That's all they concentrate on, you know? So I try not to be mean about music, but everybody can have whatever they want. But certainly other people. One of the great blessings in my marriage is that my wife has really embraced the jam band world too. So, but that took a little bit of doing.
Love that. When was the last time you danced so hard that your feet were sore?
Oh, Michael Franti concert. I still remember my quads and my calves, because he kept saying, keep jumping, keep jumping. And I was jumping, and it was this reggae beat, and there was 3,000 of us hopping around, and it was a beautiful day. And I had had an IPA, and life was good. And then we left the concert, and we were both exhausted. And then the next morning, I woke up, and I went, holy crap, I have got sore calves and quads from a Michael Franti concert. It's fantastic.
Yes. What's the book, song, or movie that said the words that you couldn't say?
I am a big fan of an old guy. He's no longer with us, named Alan Watts. And he was a Zen philosopher. And he's written many, many books. And he has a phrase that he said in a book that I've just fallen in love with. And he said, to be in a real Zen state is very similar to trying to be deliberately spontaneous.
Oh, that's so great.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
And I'm going to make a t-shirt that says deliberately spontaneous, because yes, that is the tension of my world. I love all of the value of deliberation and planning and organization and thinking and doing big things in the future. I'm a strategic planner, for heaven's sake. So I'm all about that. But at the same time, I know that the magic of life is not found that way. It's found in the spontaneity and the ability to be present in the moment. And so Alan Watts just sandwiched those two things together and put those two words together in a kind of a beautiful curse on my life. So I struggle with both of those things, both deliberation and spontaneity, on a regular basis.
What gets an undeserved bad reputation?
Tofu.
Yes.
I speak the truth, don't I?
You do.
I mean, this is an amazing food.
It is.
It can be anything and do anything. It's all protein, and it's no cholesterol, and it's just this perfect food, but people hate it.
Yes.
And I know if I'm doing a keynote speech, if I want to get a laugh line, I can just throw the word tofu in, and people will, they immediately have a visceral reaction. I said, oh, yes, you get that invitation from a friend who invites you to come to their annual tofu boil. Why, you know, you somehow find a way not to show up for that. But as a guy who cooks, I am growing more and more to really see that as a perfect food that you can do amazing things with if you bring a little bit of seasoning and flavor and technique to it. It's a stunning food.
Love. What's your favorite thing that someone you admire does?
Someone I admire has the first word that came to mind was discipline, but it's more than that. It is, in fact, I was having a conversation about this earlier today. It's about a person who is comfortable and every single day seeks discomfort. The day is not a good day unless they have challenged themselves in some way. They put themselves out of their comfort zone in some way. And this person not only does this, but they do it systematically. Mm. So they're kind of constantly working on, if there is something that really brings them discomfort, they embrace it and they challenge it and they try to understand it and they work through it, which of course is also a yoga path. Yeah. You know, when you first get into a stretch, it's like, this is not good. Your body is actually screaming at you. Yeah. But then after some time and some wisdom, all of a sudden that becomes open to you. So seeking discomfort is probably a big deal for me.
Tell us about your impossible.
My impossible is to have enough positive energy that I'm able to create a collective of people around me that are both resonating with that and feeding it and also allowing it, that can actually change the larger community. Mm. So my impossible that I'm actually thinking about, and I'm looking at retirement at some point. And for me, it's like, okay, buckaroo, now it's time for you to actually go do something real. For the last 25 or 30 years, you've done things that have been professional. But now let's go alleviate the challenges of people who have no home at night. But I know I can't do it alone. So I'm all about trying to find communities to be a part of. But then once you're in that community, to have that community really resonate bigger and do bigger, cooler things. There's a woman that I'm working with now up in Seattle who had three children and lost her middle child, who was 3 years old, to a drowning at a backyard barbecue, of all things. I can't even imagine the devastation of that. So what'd she do? She started a nonprofit that is teaching children all over the country how to swim. It's called No More Under. It's an amazing charity. They're doing amazing things. And that's the kind of thing that she's done. She's created this community, and now she's pushing it out. And then she found me, and she's trying to say, can you help me push it out more? And that's I love the impossible that's out there, but I know I can't do it alone. So I'm trying to find and build community.
What are some of the challenges you faced that seemed insurmountable at the time?
Parenting?
Yes.
You laugh with a knowing laugh.
Yes. Yes.
Because it's such a weird thing when I had two daughters, right? And two strong-willed, smart, very different humans. And there were times when they were 14, 15, 16 years old, I was like, I love you so much. I would give my life for you. And I simultaneously want to shoot you out of a cannon. And it was an exasperating thing, but I really had to, it was like two emotions that couldn't live in the same space at the same time. Happily, everything worked out well. They are in fact lovely and wonderful humans who are living a great life and doing some interesting things for the world. But there were times, as I know every parent experiences, where you really question, am I doing the right thing? Is this, what have I done? Why is this happening?
Yes. Was there a point during your journey when you felt like giving up?
No. That never happened. What did happen was I realized how ignorant I was, or how I needed to learn, or how I needed to listen. Oftentimes that was really it. Whenever I hit that point of like, everything I'm trying is not working, then it wasn't about giving up. It was about, okay, so shut the heck up and listen and really get another look at this. It's kind of like, I don't know if you do word puzzles. I'm a word puzzle guy. And sometimes I'll be working on an airplane or something, and I'll get stuck at a word puzzle. And I'm like, there's no word that will actually fit here. And I've exhausted it. I'll put it down. And then 30 minutes later, I'll pick it up and bing, there it is. And it's that kind of thing that I was tapping into. It was like, just walk away for a minute and let it settle down. But I never, ever thought, I got to walk away from this.
What's one thing you've learned about yourself while going through your impossibility?
That it ain't about me. And that hurt sometimes. And it left me feeling at sea sometimes. But now I love it. And it's like, well, of course, it shouldn't be. That's not what it's about at all. And so now I'm embracing that. But there were times there where it really created existential dread, where it's like, well, what is her? But it's not about me. And it wasn't ever about me. And that was a sort, it was very interesting because back to the bourbon, I think one of the things that I know from other, I have the blessing of working with people who are military, former military, retired military, active military, and special forces. And they often will wear a t-shirt that says bourbon helps. And it's about PTSD, and it's about, and it is, it's about this numbing effect that the drug of alcohol can bring. And it's magnificent. When you're in pain, numbing it is a great thing, you know? But what you realize, of course, is that when you are able, it doesn't last, and it won't help you in the long term. It may give you this much relief, but it's not going to give you relief in the long term. So that was the lesson.
What's your advice for folks to face their fear of inaction and use the fire in their bellies to bring their impossible dreams to life?
Again, a conversation we were in this morning. That's what it's all about. It is about that first step. It's about the first standing up off the sofa, you know, and saying, I can do this. I think we're... The mistake I've always made as a fairly extreme thinker is I would set goals that were way too high and fail horribly and then say, see, I'm a failure. And now I am much more about taking those tiny, 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 tiny steps and being perfectly okay with that journey taking a little bit longer to get there correctly. So my advice would be tiny steps. If it's about getting fit and you can't get up out of bed in the morning, this was a conversation my wife and I were having, because I'm wanting to do more exercise, but I don't have the time. And I love to sleep in. And so now I'm having to carve out time in the morning. I know that's that's a superpower that you have. And so so what did I say? Oh, I'm going to get up at 4 every, well, no, you know what? I should get up at 6 and start there. Instead of 7, right? So it's not like I need to get up at 4 and change my whole world. I just need to get up, or even, you know, 6:30, anything would be better. Buy myself 30 minutes in the morning instead of, 3 hours, which would be ideal. Again, take it in small steps, take a bite.
What do you look forward to most in the next 12 months?
Seeing my new granddaughter up close and personal. Yay. Hazel Joyce. She's now a month old and doing extremely well. And I can't wait to see her and look at her eyes and have that moment where she's looking at me. That'll be a neat moment. I'm looking forward to seeing my niece graduate from law school at Berkeley, a young woman who was more tenacious than I've seen anybody about approaching a graduate school level program. And she decided on it. She went for it, and she's going to be clerking for a federal judge in Detroit. And I know, shout out to Detroit, starting next fall. So she's changed her life there. And then I'm also excited to have my father-in-law come and live with us. He's 90 years old. And he's going to be in our house. And he was a profound father figure to me. And I feel grateful to be able to have him in my life and to be with him through the rest of his life. So that's going to be cool too.
Who's someone else that should tell us their story?
There's a young woman sitting in the room with me right now named Samiksha, and she's got a story to tell. She was an orphan in India, and I met her first when she was a year and a half old. And we brought her to the United States, and her parents are magnificent humans who live in Seattle. She has a sister also from the same orphanage. But what a story. I mean, she's a Seattle girl. I mean, she's just, you know, she's Indian, but she's a Seattle girl. And so it's a very wonderful thing to see her try to make sense of the world now that she is almost 20 and trying to make her way in this life. And it's interesting to hear what she thinks about and what she worries about. But there's lots of other folks. I mean, I think the beautiful thing about what you discovered doing this podcast is that people are amazing if you give them a chance to tell their story.
So why is it important to have a coach, no matter how long you've been leading or doing whatever it is you may be doing? First of all, it's my belief that all of us have an opportunity to learn and improve every single day. And that is certainly one of my goals. And I think leadership is one of those things that demands people to remain curious and open to how they can improve. And, you know, I was really thrilled that our board was willing to invest in coaching for me. And I spoke to a lot of different people to explore who might be a good fit. And what I would say is that Randy has just been exceptional. You know, I think it's important in a coaching relationship that you have some synergies in terms of what you believe in the world. And we do have a lot of those. And Randy is maybe 1,000 times smarter than me and thinks in ways that I sometimes wouldn't without his guidance. And I never leave a call without having my brain hurt a little and having written down 3 things that I need to think about deeply for weeks before I can apply them. So, you know, he's just helped me get better. And I really relish the opportunity to spend that time with him. So I guess the difference between, you know, taking big leaps and taking tiny steps sometimes is probably about context. And I do appreciate, and I actually, as Randy was talking about tiny steps, what I was thinking is we've had many guests talk about that, right? The idea of just do something. And so I do think that that's important. I think for me, there are moments where tiny steps make sense. And I do think that for leaders, there is something about, at the very least, the challenge of the leap that matters, because the hyperbole and the vision is the lid for everyone else. So my Grandma Edith is one of the most influential people in my life. And so, you know, as I was thinking about some writing this week and truly about the place of women in the world, she has had an extraordinary impact on my place in the world, and the opportunities I have were made more robust by all the steps and pain she went through. She was a remarkable human being, brilliant and dynamic and an exceptional nurturer. She had 3 kiddos of her own, and she experienced extraordinary pain. Her father disappeared when she was little, and they never really knew what happened. There was always a question. Some believed he went and started a whole other family. It was very painful. She lost her brother in the war, and she used to describe this dream she had for years where she was running through an apple orchard that was on our farm, and, you know, she would be chasing him and reaching for him and couldn't reach him, which I think about that all the time. And then both her husbands passed. And I used to ask her when I was little, you know, why don't you get married again? And she would say with a bright smile, well, because I can't go through that much pain again. So, you know, she just had tremendous loss and yet was just resilient and passionate. And she never missed a tennis match or violin recital or, quite frankly, practice. You know, she just was ever present in my life. And, you know, I think that we have such a responsibility, specifically on the topic of women and leadership, to make these steps and to make leaps so that the Mackenzies of the world have an easier path when it's their turn.
This concludes today's episode. For exclusive content, visit us at despiteimpossible.com and subscribe to this podcast.